morning. Today is Thursday, March 15th. Joining us this morning is Eureka City School Superintendent Fred Van Vleck. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Well, I suppose today's going to be kind of interesting for you, huh?
All days are interesting for me.
Yeah, huh?
There never seems to be a lack.
You betcha.
Yesterday was a really interesting day.
Well, one day builds upon another, right?
Yes.
Okay. So I suppose for... it's been covered, but for folks who didn't know the distinction between what Eureka City Schools, high school specifically, and other high schools either throughout the country or throughout the area are trying to accomplish with some of the, I would call it awareness strategies, kind of as a blanket on this, what was the goal of what occurred?
Well, first off, it's not a Eureka City School endorsed activity. It wasn't at all. The only thing that was really our charge was to do everything we could to keep students safe. That was the foremost important thing. But students have the same right that we all have under the First Amendment and freedom of speech, and to really go out and talk about what they believe in. And we had a group of...
So it wasn't sanctioned, but it must have been allowed or permitted. I mean, I know permitted now has a very technical governmental definition, but... No negative repercussions for the kids to participate.
Actually, there are negative repercussions, and the negative repercussions are just like whenever you miss any class. And so they're held accountable for the classes that they miss. In fact, because of their First Amendment rights, we can't make the discipline for them missing class any stricter than what it would be on any other day.
Or less?
Or less, yeah. Yeah.
So teacher's prerogative?
Well, no, not teacher's prerogative. We have a practice where when students cut class, they get these things called minutes. And if they get so many minutes, they can't participate in extracurricular activities. And then, of course, we phone the parents, and the parents are a big part of the process.
But if I was like a civics teacher, really kind of tough to say, don't participate, don't pay attention, don't look at what's going on nationally, don't participate. I mean, it's almost like extra points for participating for certain biology. Okay, different ballgame.
I certainly get that, but there's other opportunities outside of the school day also where they can go out and demonstrate for what they believe in and what they want to be active around. And so, and again, it's their right to step out and do this. And it's interesting because the students actually have more First Amendment rights than what the teachers have, because the teachers cannot walk out of the classroom and go take a stand for what they believe in, because they're responsible to their job. And that's overstepping the boundaries of their job by exercising their First Amendment rights at that point. Whereas the students
during their work day.
That is correct. Yeah. That is correct.
It's not restricted by the contracts. It's just restricted by the job performance requirements?
Well, it's basically restricted by law, because they're on the government clock at that time, and the government is theoretically nonpartisan, and being nonpartisan, when you're working with tax dollars, you cannot take a stand for what your personal beliefs are.
So what the students were wanting to do this for, obviously, it's connected to Florida, which I find rather sad, because Sandy Hook in Connecticut didn't get any reaction. Similar, Columbine didn't get any reaction. Some of the others haven't, but now, and I don't know if it's tipping point or not, but it's kind of like, okay, these kids counted, these other kids didn't count. It's like, wait a minute, time out. Yeah. Let's talk about everybody, if we're going to talk about anybody,
right?
Rather than a philosophical statement, which. My sense is that that's more what the Eureka High kids were doing, is it was a philosophical statement rather than specific to any one particular incident.
Well, let's start with the odds. I read the odds the other day of a child being involved in some sort of school where there was a school shooting is 1 in 750,000. I would love those odds for the lottery. So it certainly isn't that slim of odds, but it is pretty thin. However, thinking about that, we certainly have to prepare for that, and we certainly have to listen to those things that we need to shore up within our district. And what's interesting about the tact that our students took was they didn't want to walk out in support of gun control or anything like that. And that's the nationwide premise of these 17 minutes of walkout. 17 minutes, it was from 10 to 10:17, 1 minute in support of each of those students who was tragically killed in that South Florida shooting. Their premise was they wanted to walk out in support of school safety.
Now, you guys have played that game a couple of times because of some of the incidents that have occurred on the campus or around the campus over the last years. So it's not a novel concept, certainly, about paying attention to school safety, campus safety, engaging with the kids, engaging with the parents, the communication, all that stuff. Is that, do you feel satisfied where you are now? Or is this something that is going to continue to need to be enhanced?
Never satisfied with where we're at, because it could be just tomorrow. We could be one day away from a tragedy up here. In the likely tragedy that we could face at any given point is more likely from some sort of an earthquake or something along those lines. However, you're never 100% prepared for something like that. The best thing we can do is keep trying new scenarios, new potential things that could happen, and training for that. But the thing that's unique about that is that each scenario is always going to be different, and you're never 100% prepared for that difference.
All right, fine. We got 20 seconds here. I can't even ask you a question, man. One, because it takes me longer to ask it. Two, because it takes you multiple times longer to answer it. So,
are you saying I'm long-winded?
I'm just saying that you're well thought out and want to share all the details.
Oh, okay. I'll take that.
It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Fred Van Fleck from Eureka City Schools. Fred, the planning that you were talking about for student safety, campus safety, was it 2-3 years ago you had the pellet gun shots, I guess?
Oh, no, a kid actually got shot by a pellet gun.
Was that 2 years ago?
The days start blending together. It was at least 3 years ago.
Okay. Yes. Okay. So you had a kind of a sampling, if you will,
mm-hmm.
of something. I know when you were sharing some of the designs for the some of the reconstruction or the new construction around some of the schools with the bond monies, you were talking about the ability to lock down schools and make it so that it wasn't just anybody in the neighborhood wandering onto the campus, that it was a little bit more involved than just that. Is that California standards? Is that Eureka City School standards? Is that federal funding matching standards? What started that? Because in the old days, we'd play ball on the school campuses. It was welcome. Bring the neighborhood in. Make this the focal point of the area. Play here during the weekends after school. And if you're brothers and sisters were at school, you could still be part of everything, and it was more family welcoming. Why the shift?
Well, I'd say that the shift went with the shift that we all had from a front yard nation to a backyard nation. And that is the whole idea of learning about some of the threats that we have in our neighborhoods and some of the well, sorry for lack of a better term, crazy people that are out there that do crazy things and bad things to our children and to our communities. And as we learned more about them and it was more publicized and we all became more aware, we needed to do some adaptation in our schools, and we needed to think about how we can keep our children safe when they're at school. The problem is, you think about Eureka High School, and that becomes incredibly challenging because it's such a spread out campus. We've got classes that are down at the bottom of the hill there on Del Norte Street. We've got classes that are across the street, across J Street, over on the old Marshall campus. And there is no real way to fence that campus in. And there's a couple schools of thoughts on fencing as well. I would say that the lion's share of campuses across the state of California now are fenced in. But fencing in does just that too. It fences people in. It doesn't just fence people out. So that's a double-edged sword, and you have to be careful about that and think about that when you plan that. But, you know, the best thing that we can be doing is being aware of our surroundings, reporting things that are suspicious, make sure that we're having the police follow up on things that are suspicious that are out there. Because at the end of the day, we have to be aware, and we have to be proactive in working on what we can to try to stay away from some of these terrible things that have been happening.
School resource officers. I know Eureka PD, along with the city schools, has had in the past.
And still do.
Various folks kind of rotating through. But it's my understanding has been in the past, it wasn't like a high school assigned. It was, whether it was Chris or one of the other fellows, kind of on a rotational basis, on a part-time, you know, 50% of a day, and you kind of pop around and you see all the various schools, and here's kind of what your schedule is. Okay? I mean, that's certainly one model, and it obviously was an affordable one, and one that folks felt comfortable with. Is that still the case?
It is. We have one resource officer for the district, and he is primarily assigned to Eureka High School, but does go out to the other sites on an as-needed basis and also on a random basis. But it is, he's stretched fairly thin.
Busy guy.
He is.
You mentioned communications, and there's a couple of things that folks have talked about in the aftermath of all these various schools, is that there were signs and indicators all over the place, and people either chose not to recognize them, or ignored if it was shared. Or, you know, it was okay within the school, but then communicating to the law enforcement entities, something happened. Has that been an area of concern for Eureka City Schools over the last weeks, months, years? That, okay, we may be communicating, but are we communicating clearly to the representatives that we need to that wear the badge?
It's been an absolute area of concern, and a thing that's incredibly challenging around that is that there is no real profile for a school shooter, and nobody really knows what they look like, how they act before, what leads up to it.
So far, most of them have been guys, right?
As far as I know, most of them have been guys. So I guess that eliminates 50% of the population. I'm not aware of any females that have been out there, but the thing that's absolutely...
Doesn't exclude them, certainly, but...
Right. The thing that's absolutely crazy is that the fact that there's no real profile, and there's some students that I think about, wow, we've really got to be concerned about that student, and we really follow up on them and really do some really intensive intervention, and nothing ever happens. Maybe that's because we did that intensive intervention, but then I bet you there is a lot of arguments, and I've seen it on some of the people who have gone out and done the school shootings. People are like, wow, never saw this one coming. And it's, so it's trying to figure out.
Yeah, it's like the extremes, right? Either, yeah. He was such a mild-mannered man, you know, that goes crazy. Or, you know, we knew for the last 10 years, we've known and we've had the reportings of and da-da-da-da and been disciplined. And so it seems like it's one extreme or the right. Other rather than something else.
What I'd be interested in is how many students are on that list that have been on there for the last 10 years and we've had reportings of and we've had suspicions of. Because I bet that list is a lot bigger than we all think.
Yeah. Now, do you have a school psychologist? Is that still?
Yeah. Well, we have multiple school psychologists, and we do what's called a threat assessment. So anytime that we have any type of a report of a student's can be anywhere from they're going to hurt themselves to where they're going to come in and harm others. And we trigger a whole team that comes in, assesses a student, and one of the key things that go along with that is, number one, do they have the mental ability to understand the threat they made? And number two, do they have the physical ability, whether that means either guns in the house or a knife or whatever they're threatening to do it with, to take action on what that threat was?
It's 8:30.
Do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Fred Van Fleck. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting, REDEC, American Ag Credit, and by Lolita Cheese Factory. Fred, the concern a lot of folks have with either campus safety, student safety, things of this area, there's the social components, certainly. You know, how kids interact with one another, how they interact with parents, role models, whether or not the parents are there, do they show up, you know, are they involved with their kids or not? I mean, all that kind of stuff. But then there's the structural component, the school part of it. When you look at the campuses around here, you mentioned Eureka High specifically, but I was thinking the junior highs also because they've got lots of access with woods right next door to them as well. Is it vigilance that's going to do it? Because I don't see that you'd be able to construct physical barriers ever. I mean, there's just so many different access points because that's the way these schools were designed.
Well, I understand our president is attempting to do just that.
Well, I mean, you know, if money is not, if you had another $40 million.
Yes, I know.
And you had three campuses, because I don't think the elementary school, well, you can't say that because you got, you know, divorce settlements and child custody things.
Well, Sandy Hook, elementary school.
Yeah, different dynamics, but. Yeah, if you have enough money, you can solve anything. Fine, but I don't hear that you've got that kind of money for this kind of stuff. So what are some of the things that either parents or friends of, or if it's your kids' friends, you know, what are some of those things that you're looking to do in the next 3 or 4 years for parents, for community, and for the kids themselves, as well as hardening the target, to make these schools a little bit safer?
So some of the things, a great example of one of the projects that we're doing at Eureka High School, and this isn't going to help the entire situation, but it's certainly going to help a big part of the situation, is 1 in 3 of our students at Eureka High School is enrolled in an ag class. The unfortunate reality is if you're enrolled in an ag class, you have to walk to the bottom of the hill down there, the bottom of the hill down North Street down by Albee Stadium.
35% of your student body is taking an ag class?
33%, yes.
Wow.
Yep.
Right. Is there any other class that, or any discipline that's that high? I mean, chemistry is not that high.
Well, if you looked at English, 100% of our students take English.
Well, yeah,
you know. But as far as elective areas, that is by far the number one CTE area for Eureka City Schools. I would say it's the number one CTE area in the county. And CTE
is that
being
really swung?
Career technical education.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Vocational class.
Yes. Yes.
Somehow that's kind of cool.
It is. It's great.
Grass stains. Dirt under the fingernails, normal, regular stuff.
Well,
that's kind of cool.
Well, actually, I would argue in the ag program now, it's not just cows and plows. It's different. You have your full gamut of students with the students with the dirt underneath the fingernails and the grass stains all the way up to your 4.0 students who are not
that I was one, but I knew a couple. Yeah, I mean,
You're talking about a student with the grass under the fingernails. You certainly were a 4.0, right?
No. That was way too high for me. Yeah, I ended with a 3.0. Look it up. You can. I think the records are still there. But connected to the ground, to understanding, you know, when a tree falls, what a tree is used for. When you catch a fish, it doesn't come in wrapped plastic ready for, you know, you have to do things to the
chocolate milk doesn't come from brown cows.
Yeah, regular stuff. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, potatoes don't come from the grocery store.
Right.
That kind of stuff. I mean, that to me is cool. That it's that high.
Yes.
It'd be really neat if it was that high in the metropolitan areas also.
It would be. But the exciting piece that's going with that is unfortunately, our welding shop was condemned at the beginning of this year because of a failing foundation. And so we applied for a career and technical educational grant and received that, which was $3 million. We're matching that with $3 million in local funding and building a $6 million ag facility. And the piece that wraps into the safety is we are removing that from the bottom of the hill, and we're going to build that up on top of the hill by the welding shop. And so that's going to have two science classrooms in it for ag science. Did I say by the welding shop? I meant by the auto shop. That's what I meant. But anyways, by the auto shop, right between the auto shop and the library there at Eureka High School, in that staff parking lot that's up there, and two lab classrooms, a regular classroom, and a welding shop, all in that same building that's going to be going in right there. And it'll get all of those students at the top of the hill. And so when you're talking, one in three of our students enrolled in an ag class, that is a tremendous amount of students that we're keeping more into the core of the campus. And it certainly is a step in the right direction. That doesn't help us for the woodshop program because we've got a very vibrant woodshop program. The woodshop was built right around 2004, somewhere in that genre.
Is that Marshall?
What's that?
Wasn't that part of what they used Marshall School for?
No, it's actually right down behind the welding shop at the bottom of the hill down there.
Okay, so that'll be a sole function.
Be
so
just the woodshop down there, yep. And then we'll convert.
Well, that'll be kind of cool to have that much space down there, too.
Yeah, and there'll be a parking lot down there. That's what we're going to convert where the welding shop and the portable ag classrooms are. School farm will stay down there where some of the animals are, and the greenhouses, those will still be down there. So there'll be times when they go down for the hands-on piece down the hill. But
more of a field trip then rather than a classroom setting.
Correct. Yep. So that's an example of some of the things that we're thinking about and what's changed our building program from where we were even 15 years ago. Just being cognizant about every time we build something, we think about safety. At our elementary schools, the two new offices that we're putting in on the Lafayette campus and on the Alice Burney campus will be a controlled entrance as opposed to just having an open entrance. And so what that means is once the school day has started, you actually have to walk by the receptionist, unless you're willing to jump a big fence, to get on the campus. And so that'll help us.
And into the lake.
Yeah. That's our
moat. The alligator pond.
That's our moat.
Oh,
a moat. A moat around the castle, yes.
KIDS News and Information Time, it's 8:42.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission and Fly Humboldt remind you that flying local is buying local and supports local jobs and investment. Fly Humboldt is a community-based coalition of businesses, organizations, and citizens dedicated to getting more flights to more destinations. We know that reliable and affordable air service is a critical part of a healthy community. For more information, visit flyhumboldt.org or find us on Facebook.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:46. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Fred Van Fleck. Fred, one of the things I think that's challenging sometimes is to get to the decision makers who really don't have or what don't have at their disposal what appears to be accurate information. School board, city council, county board of supervisors, commissions, et cetera, et cetera. When you look at things at the state level, do the folks who are in charge of funding of some of the special budgetary attachments, do they get it? Do they understand? Or is rural education so radically different than urban education in the K-12 system?
Well, I could say There's multiple answers there. Yes, rural is much different than urban, which is interesting. I just talked about the CTE grant here just a minute ago, and guess what Eureka City Schools is classified as far as the state is concerned? Urban. So do you think...
What standard do they use?
That'd be a great question. I wish I knew the answer to that.
Yeah.
And how Eureka is considered to be an urban school district is beyond me, because we are certainly not...
It's not population-based, would it?
No, it's not. I think it has to do with just how your city is set up, and it has absolutely nothing to do with population. So that's a fine example of how sometimes the way the state is set up, not everyone gets the difference between this end of the state and some of the other more populous ends of the state. And so that creates some unique challenges. One of our biggest challenges that we have right now as far as the budget goes is the uncertainty of moving forward. And the uncertainty of moving forward is obviously Governor Brown is about finished with his terms in office. And like Governor Brown or don't like Governor Brown, from an educational budget perspective, he was remarkably successful. And that's policy aside, no matter where you stand on policy and all those other things, education budget did the best it's done since I've been in education now for over 20 years under Governor Brown as far as actual dollars coming in.
So is it a priority, however, or was it something that was different? Okay, if you say education's a priority, great. Okay, I want X percent thrown or designated to education. Thank you very much. Or here's education, but here's how I want you to use it. We got all these strings attached and all this categorical funding so that all the special interest groups vote for me and get their people to vote for me, but it really isn't necessarily translating into the classroom.
Well, years ago during the Great Recession, the categorical funding basically went away. And so where I said that he did the most for education as far as our funding, there's still a gap between if we were following the true projection on cost of living allowances and where we're funded at right now, there still is a tremendous gap that's there. And so the big question is, as the new governor comes in, what are his policies and practices going to do for education? And if you pick the area that I think has the biggest gap in funding right now, as far as I'm concerned, and I would say this statewide, certainly for Eureka City Schools, and that's special education funding. Last week I was able to...
Not the requirements, but the funding.
The funding itself, yes. I was able to travel to Sacramento. I got to attend a hearing in Sacramento. But to put it in perspective, for Eureka City Schools, we run about a $40 million budget. We have a contribution out of our general fund of $6 million. That's approximately 60% above what is funded to us for special education. Students with disabilities is a very important group for us to educate, but the problem is that we're educating them at the expense of all of our regular education students.
Nobody said it'd be easy for you, dude. Thanks for coming by. See everybody tomorrow.